The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism.
Entangling Vines, Case 18. One day, the poet Shangu was visiting Huetang Zuxin. Huetang said, "You know the passage in which Confucius says, 'My friends, do you think I'm hiding things from you? In fact, I am hiding nothing from you.' It's just the same with the great matter of Zen. Do you understand this?" "I don't understand," Shangu replied. Later, Huetang and Shangu were walking in the mountains, where the air was filled with the scent of the sweet olive blossoms. Huetang asked, "Do you smell the fragrance of the blossoms?" Shangu said, "I do." Huetang said, "You see? I'm hiding nothing from you." At that moment, Shangu was awakened. 2 months later, he visited Cixin Wuxian. Cixin greeted him and said, "I'll die, and you'll die, and we'll end up burnt into two heaps of ashes. At that time, where will we meet?" Shangu tried to respond, but couldn't come up with anything. Later, while on the road to Qianan, he woke from a nap and suddenly understood Cixin's intent. Thereafter, he attained the samadhi of perfect freedom. So this koan is very dear to me. I discovered it just in the last couple of years, and we've worked with it in our koan salon, and I've held it very closely in my heart. These people who lived so long ago feel very alive to me. And all through this coming and going session, we've been exploring different koans and encouraging everyone to enter the worlds, enter the bodies and hearts and minds of these people in all the different stories. And I've entered the hearts and minds as best I can of these three people in this story, two Zen teachers and a poet. Shangu, a poet. They all lived in the 11th century in China. And I looked them up and tried to find out a little bit more about them. They lived so long ago that there's not a lot about any of them. But I want to tell you what I found, because their stories, their personal stories, touched me so much that they illuminated the koan for me, which is how koans work. Our personal stories illuminate koans, and the stories of the people in the stories illuminate the koans, and practice illuminates everything, and even beyond that, everything we encounter, without exception, illuminates everything. So starting with Shangu, the poet in the story, who's visiting the Zen teacher Huetang, and Shangu was an interesting character. He was not a Zen teacher himself. He was a famous poet at that time in China. And he was a government official as well. And he's famous in Confucian legend because, as you know, Chan Buddhism, as it was called in China, or Zen Buddhism, as it's come to be called these days, was a combination of a very interesting set of circumstances: the arrival of Buddhism in China, and then the combining of it with Confucian teachings and Taoist teachings. So Shangu was a Confucian scholar. He was someone who knew the teachings of Confucius, who had lived quite some time before any of these people were born. He knew them inside out. And when he was about middle-aged, maybe, his mother got very sick. And the story is that he left the capital where he had this government position, and he left his career as a scholar and a government official and a poet, and he stayed with his mother while she sickened and died. It took her a year from the time she got sick to her final breath. And the legend of Shanggu is that he stayed by her bedside constantly, never even changing his clothes, which by the end of the year had fallen away in rags, and probably there was some strong scent in the air as well, I suspect. So he was revered as the example of a great son, the exemplar of filial piety, devotion to your parents. So this was a person who was a bit complicated, heartbroken and devoted by the death of his mother and her illness, a poet who also worked in the government, and a scholar who studied, and also a lover of Zen, a lover of Chan. And he went to see this teacher, Hui Tang, and had the experience of Wei Tang quoting to him something from Confucius, which is a wonderful thing that Wei Tang did, because think again about Shanggu, he knew Confucius inside out. But when Hui Tang asked him the question about some quote from Confucius, from the Analects, he couldn't answer. And you can imagine that it took him a while to have this sink deeply, deeply, deeply into his heart. I also love it that in this story he has an awakening, but then he meets another teacher, Cixin, who is, by the way, Hui Tang's Dharma heir. And Cixin asks him a question about life and death, and he can't answer it. And it's not until he's on a walk, when he lies down and takes a nap, and then wakes up from the nap, that he understands Cixin's meaning. So before I come back to this koan that I read you, I want to read you another story, which I was delighted to find, because it, for me, rounded out these two characters, the Zen teacher and then the other Zen teacher, the younger Zen teacher, Hui Tang and Cixin. And it's about Cixin's encounter, his first encounter with his teacher, Hui Tang. So one of the things about this teacher, Hui Tang, is that he taught in a very regular way. We sometimes say that David and I, and now all the senior students who are giving talks, and the other transmitted teachers, we all say the same thing over and over and over again. The more you listen to our talks, the more you start to understand that. There's not a lot of variety, although, you know, we tell stories and bring in poems and sutras and all kinds of stuff, but really it's the same thing over and over. Those of you who know me may know some of the things that I say over and over. And so different teachers have these things they do to show the way, which is beyond words. Can't be expressed, really, but, you know, we're stuck with this weird job description where we have to say things about it. And so some of you probably know Lin Ji was famous for shouting, and Ma Tzu was famous for picking up his stick and hitting people. That was his response to a lot of stuff. And Juji was famous for sticking up his finger. And all these people had their shticks, you might say, as well as sticks, but they had their shticks. So this guy, Hui Tang, also had his shtick. He raised his fist. He would raise his fist, and he would ask this question: if you call it a fist, you are mistaken. If you don't call it a fist, then you've avoided the question. So what do you call it? So his student, Si Xin, was really puzzled by this question. He couldn't understand it. And he pondered it for 2 years, and then he figured it out. And that's always a cautionary moment when you think you've figured something out. So he went to his teacher, and his teacher didn't pay any attention to him when he started talking. In fact, and this is a really interesting thing, I've never come across anything like this, his teacher started to get very agitated and upset with him as he kept jabbering on. And Si Xin kept trying to explain his understanding about the fist. And finally, Wei Tong said, "Stop! Stop! Can you feed people by talking about food?" Well, just put yourself in Si Xin's place for a moment. You've had this really great insight, and you just got it all together, and you really can't wait to share it. We find in the stories of Si Xin that he's quite impulsive. He's always running around trying to tell people things. This happens even after he's a teacher. But it certainly happens when he's a student. So in the written version of this, it says, "This startled and distressed Si Xin." I think it must have really sent him on a bender, because he said, "I'm done. I do not want to be in this place anymore. Get me out of here." He said, actually, "I don't want to be in this place of broken bows and spent arrows." He was fed up with his teacher, and he said, "I am out of here." And then he tried once more, and he said, "Please be compassionate towards me. Can't you tell me where I can find paradise?" Wei Tong said, "A single dust mote flies, and heaven is concealed. A mustard seed falls, and earth is overturned. Paradise still torments you with confusion." What a loving thing to say. He actually did respond out of his own agitation at this talkative student who thought he knew the way, by showing him paradise, by saying, "It's right here. Don't look somewhere else." And then he said this to his student, "You must completely die so that for unlimited eons to come, with total mind, you'll be able to hear the teaching." And you know what Si Xin did when he heard that teaching of his teachers? He left. He left the temple. He said, "It's no use. I give up." One day, he was talking with a fellow temple leaver. Si Xin had decided to wander around until he found a real teacher, someone who could really show him the way. And he was talking with another pilgrim, and suddenly there was a flash of lightning and a loud thunderclap. Si Xin instantly woke up. He realized the meaning of what his teacher had been trying to tell him all that time ago. And in his way, he rushed to see his teacher. And it says here in the written version, forgetting custom, he ran to his teacher and started doing his thing. "You'll never guess what I just discovered." He probably, what that means is that he didn't wait in line for Doksan. He didn't make his bows properly. He was all over the place. What a great spirit, right? All over the place. And he came in to Hui Tang's room, and he said this: "Everyone on earth has attained Zen. They just haven't realized it." When I read that line from Si Xin, I thought, yeah, that's my teaching. I don't hold up a finger or lift my stick and beat you or yell and shout. I keep telling you over and over again, you are already a Buddha. You are already an awakened being, but you just haven't realized it yet. And Si Xin realized this for himself. And of course, I couldn't tell you about it unless I realized it for myself. I have never met anybody who is not an awakened being. And all the stuff we throw up, all the words and the opinions and the endless stories about ourselves, I'm this and I'm that and I'll never and I always, is just hiding the fact that already accomplished, already done. So Cixin says, everyone on earth has attained Zen, they just haven't realized it. And his teacher laughed, and he said, you are really something. You're a practitioner of the first rank. You're excellent. Wow, I'm really impressed. And then he said, how can I ever face you? So that's Cixin's story. Now we'll return to the original story, and maybe you'll hear a little bit more about these people who are populating this lovely story about sweet olive blossoms. One day, the poet Shanggu was visiting Hui Tang. This is the teacher of Cixin. And Hui Tang quotes Confucius to him. He says, you know the place where Confucius says, my friends, do you think I'm hiding something from you? In fact, I am hiding nothing from you. It's just the same with the great matter of Zen. Do you understand this? And this, of course, is the same teaching that Cixin realized when he heard the thunder and saw the lightning, when everything dropped away, and he knew the truth about the awakened heart manifesting everywhere. It's the same question, told in a slightly different way, asked in a slightly different way. Do you think I'm hiding something from you? I am hiding nothing from you. The great awakened heart is manifesting everywhere without exception. I am hiding nothing from you. And then he says to the great poet and Confucian scholar and the example of filial piety, Shanggu, he says, do you understand this? And Shanggu, because he's a sincere practitioner, says, no, I do not get it. I do not understand it. And then they go for a walk in the mountains, and the air is filled with the scent of the sweet olive blossoms. I don't think I've ever smelled sweet olive blossoms myself, but I can imagine that they're a strong scent. The spring full of the aroma of these flowers on the olive tree, on the sweet olive tree. And the teacher asks him, do you smell that? Do you smell the fragrance of the sweet blossoms? And Shanggu says, I do, I smell it. Yes, I smell it. And Hui Tang says, you see, I'm hiding nothing from you. And at that moment, Shanggu was enlightened. But he keeps working, because as we've been talking about all these weeks here of our coming and going, Sashin, all these koans talk about awakening, but awakening is not one single thing that happens. It's an opening to something that we have denied ourselves or has been hidden from us. But remember, nothing's ever hidden. And then we have to integrate it with our lives. We have to keep going. We have to never give up. Our koan curriculum, as we call it, is designed to facilitate this. We have insights into koans, those of us who are working on koans, and we bring them to the teacher, sometimes with excitement, sometimes with trepidation, sometimes with the old story, I'm such an idiot. And it doesn't matter. If we pass, we pass, and if we don't, we don't. And all the time, we are the awakened nature, the Buddha, coming in the door, presenting ourselves, whether we know it or not. And this goes on and on and on for a lifetime. The same is true with breath practice and with Shikantaza. We devote ourselves to being with the breath, or we devote ourselves to our posture and our breath and our upright sitting through everything as everything comes and goes. And this devotion is demonstrated in the Dokusan room also, and it's demonstrated everywhere we go. And the things of the world come to us, and we learn more and more how to receive them. Zen is not that complicated. The breath, upright sitting in the middle of everything, koan practice, all three of these great ways of practice point to the same teaching. Already here, let's cultivate our attention so that we can be ready when the lightning strikes, when the thunderclap comes, when we are pushed a little by our teacher to say, do you smell those sweet orange blossoms? It doesn't have to come as some beautiful thing. It could be, do you smell the shit on your shoes? It could be anything, but something that wakes us up, interfering with our solid, delusive certainty. So then he goes, Shanggu has that great awakening from smelling the blossoms, but then he visits Sishin, the student of this teacher, Huaitang, the one who was awakened by the lightning and thunder. And Sishin says to Shanggu, the one who stood by his mother's bed for a year, caring for her, he greeted him and he said, I'm going to die, and you're going to die. A very resonant thing to say to Shanggu. I'm going to die, and you're going to die, and we'll both end up burnt up into two heaps of ashes. At that time, where will we meet? For me, this may be the center of the koan, the hua do, as we say, the kernel, the nugget of the koan. Every koan has one, some have a bunch of them, something where the whole koan turns around this. How can we meet when we're dead and we're two heaps of ashes? Where will we meet? Where will we meet? And Shanggu tries to answer, but he can't come up with anything. He's completely stumped. Maybe it caught him just in the, because he'd been preoccupied with his mother's death. Maybe he couldn't go there in that moment. He was too full, maybe, of his grieving. Who knows? Even though he'd had that awakening experience with Shishin's teacher, nothing came. He was stumped. And then later, while he's on the road to Qiannan, he takes a nap. And when he wakes up, he suddenly understands what Sishin was getting at. And thereafter, it says, he attained the samadhi of perfect freedom. Don't be fooled by that phrase. Don't think, oh, great, all I have to do is get enough insight and I'll be free forever. As you remember in the story of Sishin and his teacher that I told earlier, the longing for paradise is with all of us. The longing for being at peace, as I spoke about last night, peace is not what we think it is. It's not the absence of being alive. It's not the absence of love and hate. It's not the absence of grief and happiness. As the teacher said in the chant we read today, Spring Everywhere, happiness, true happiness, is not dependent on conditions. It's this capacity to move with life, to be with whatever is arising fully. And when it leaves, to not go chasing after it. And when it's gone, to not wish for it to come back. Where will we meet? Where is it? Where will you wake up? How will it be for you? One day the poet Shanggu was visiting Huaitang Sushin. Huaitang said, you know the passage in which Confucius says, my friends, do you think I'm hiding things from you? In fact, I am hiding nothing from you. It's just the same with the great matter of Zen. Do you understand this? I don't understand, Shanggu replied. Later, Huaitang and Shanggu were walking in the mountains where the air was filled with the scent of the sweet olive blossoms. Huaitang asked, do you smell the fragrance of the blossoms? Shanggu said, I do. Huaitang said, you see, I'm hiding nothing from you. At that moment, Shanggu was awakened. 2 months later, he visited Sishin Wushin. Sishin greeted him and said, "I'll die, and you'll die, and we'll end up burnt into two heaps of ashes. At that time, where will we meet?" Shangu tried to respond, but couldn't come up with anything. Later, while on the road to Qian'an, he woke from a nap and suddenly understood Sishin's intent. Thereafter, he attained the samadhi of perfect freedom. Thank you. So please make yourselves comfortable, and we'll have our Dharma dialogue. Remember that we're recording this talk, so if you want to say something off the record, just let us know, and we will we'll stop it temporarily for your privacy.
So I sit here where I can see out this window, and I often raise my eyes from the floor and look out this window, and I see all these patterns made by the branches and twigs on the tree, and my mind arranges them into circles. And stuff. But one time I was sitting here, and there's a flock of pigeons, and some arrangement came by and turned right out of there, and something in your talk reminded me of that, and thinking when something like that happens, when the shit on your shoes or the flock of pigeons, it's like my mind simplifies and says, okay, that arrangement of twigs is always going to be there, but that's something that was not in my little simulated world that reminds me the world's a lot bigger. And just thank you for saying the same thing over and over again.
And there's something about these intrusions that is can both be disturbing but also such a relief. You know, we construct the world and think that we are seeing the world, and then the world very generously disrupts us, right? And without that disruption, which, by the way, you can depend on life to do that for you. You don't have to worry. Life will disrupt you here on the cushion and everywhere we go. Sometimes, as you say, the flock of pigeons, and sometimes maybe something we don't want so much. But this opportunity to meet, to see and be seen by the world.
And I appreciate you bringing up what Melissa said about the teachers sort of saying the same thing over and over again in different guises. Well, students ask the same question.
Isn't that amazing?
And sometimes people actually feel quite embarrassed when they realize it's the same question. It's actually not a problem. You know, this is your question. This is your full presentation. So let's have at it one more time, right? Great fun, great opportunity.
You know, whoever speaks next, we're going to say, "Oh yeah, you say that all the time." Yes, Maria.
And so we all know that we are already awakened, but not really. Okay. But you know, it's like getting to the point, to the next level, where you really do understand that you're awake. Right now we're sort of mouthing the words that we are Buddhas. So that road from, I do believe that that's true, that each one of us is a Buddha, but what road do we travel to get, and how long does it take, and will it ever happen?
What a great question. I don't think I've ever heard you ask that. Oh, how wonderful. You know, I was thinking when I was preparing this talk, I had an image in my mind of a postcard somebody once sent me. I think it's from the Seattle Art Museum, of a sculpture of a monk at the moment of enlightenment, at the moment of Kensho. And he's like sitting in Zazen, but he's like, he's like that. And so the answer really is, how long does it take? A split second. But then it's kind of opposing a lifetime of, I don't really believe this 100%. And this is why we talk about cultivation. You know, I can't remember who gave the talk the other day. Oh, I'm looking over here, but he's not here. Alan, about, you know, gradual cultivation and sudden enlightenment. They kind of go hand in hand. And for some of us, they're these little itty bitty things that just get buried. And for other people, they're bigger, you know, like a thunderbolt and all that. And everything in between, doesn't even matter what size it is, because we still have to do the integration work, no matter what. Even more if it's a big one. And the surprise of it, like what David was just saying, the unexpected nature, the world is constantly dumping stuff on us. And the teaching is that most people who are not Zen practitioners will have these moments of awakening, but they won't have any context to put it in. And so it'll just go, it's like, you know, like quicksand. It just goes right under and the surface stays the same. For us, we have these skillful means. We have these talks. We have the practices. We have meeting with a teacher. We have working with somebody where it's been more integrated. But never fully integrated. It couldn't be fully integrated. But more and more, so that we can catch each other in the going under the quicksand again. Right. Thank goodness. That's why we can't do this by ourselves. No. We need Buddha and Dharma, which is the teaching, and Sangha, which is the community.
So it was just interesting when people who have never meditated ask, like, what do you do there all day? Are you going to go there? And we sit for a long time. So we get talks, and then we sit again. And it's so incomprehensible to them that anything is really happening, except that we're just sitting here instead of sitting at home watching television or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, there's a famous cartoon showing two monks side by side. It's a Gahan Wilson cartoon. And this is old, grizzled monk in robes, and then a younger guy. And the caption is, "Nothing happens next. This is it." And actually, that's a pointer again to this koan. What will happen when we meet after we die and we're two heaps of ashes? How will we meet? You know, so don't try to explain it.
No, I felt that about 20 good, years ago.
Good, smart.
And it's so dangerous to talk about enlightenment, mm-hmm. You know, because just for these reasons, because we hear it and we're all so sure that we have not had it. Mm-hmm. Right? That story of the monk who comes and says, "I'm solitary and destitute. Please tell me, when will I get enlightened? When will I get it?" And the teacher ends up saying, "You've already drunk 3 cups of the finest wine in China, and yet you say you haven't moistened your lips." So, and I think, Maria, it's so important what you're saying, that just to mouth the catchphrases of Zen is not enough. In fact, it's not very satisfying at all. Maybe you can impress your friends, but probably they'll just be irritated. But to know it for ourselves, to taste it, and so we sit with this spirit of, well, for me, one of the great inquiries is, what if this is it? Or what if this is it? This, because we are so sure, so convicted, all of us have great faith, very strong faith, this could not be it. And so we go off somewhere else. Yeah.
You know, my son asked the other day, he lives in New York, and he said, so what are you doing, Mom? I said, I'm doing a mini retreat. And he said, oh, you know, I think I want to do, where do you go again? I think I want to do that. And I said, well, you can, honey.
Yeah.
But he doesn't really sit.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But you know what?
We'll see.
Doesn't matter. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing, you know, about all this. It's always the wrong thing that lures us into Zen. Always. Mm-hmm. Always. We think we know what we're getting into here. And then we're continually surprised. And the other thing is, remember, everybody, without exception, not just Zen students, are already awake. Everybody. That's the teaching. So there's a book I really love called The Common Experience. It was a research study by some people in England who put a little ad in the paper asking for anybody who'd had mystical experiences. And they got, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of responses, and they organized it into a book. And most of these experiences are little flashes of insight that then just drop away. What we're doing here is we're cultivating a context so that when those little flashes happen, there's something we can do with them. But it's easy to imagine that it's something. And what David's pointing to is so important. It's already happening right now. And we're missing it because we're thinking about something else. It's great. Yeah, Dinah.
I think that's one of the reasons that it's very hard to evangelize about this. Because, you know, people ask you, you know, have a good time at your retreat, right? And it's like, okay. And, you know, how was it? And what do you get out of all that sitting? Nothing. That's, yeah, it's, you can't. That, I'm sure that's why this practice is not spreading faster, is because you can't share it with people. Mm-hmm. You can't vocalize it. You can't.
Except you can meet people as you go through the checkout line in the grocery store. Mm-hmm. Hi, how are you? Mm-hmm. Right, we really discourage evangelizing. One, because it's impossible, right? But two, because it's not about that, as Melissa was saying. So no need for other people to sit Zen.
Yeah.
And if you know that and see that, so we say the teachers are meeting Buddha after Buddha up in the Doksan room, but you in your life are meeting Buddha after Buddha. And when you begin to see that more and more clearly, right, then... Yeah. Nothing other than, hey, so good to see you.
Look, another one.
Yeah, another Buddha.
And remember what Hoi Tung says to his student Si Shin in one of the stories I told. Words do not feed the hungry, right? Mm-hmm. So meeting somebody in the grocery store and really meeting them as a person of the way, not saying, I'm a Zen practitioner, look how cool I am, but... You know, oh, can I help you with your groceries? Or, wow, the price of bananas really gone up. Or whatever it is. That is your direct transmission of what you're learning here. And that's the stinky thing, you know, where we have people all the time who say, oh, I try to talk my son or my wife or my children into Zen and how great it is. Oh, it just pushes them further away. And then you get the really yucky thing that happens, where people say, I thought you were a Zen practitioner. Why are you getting so upset? Yeah, some laughter there. You know that one. Because we say, oh, yeah, you know, it's not about that. I get upset. And that's why I love Hoi Tung. He's so enraged. You know, wow, that's his teaching. Okay, thank you. So, yeah, Eric?
I love the part, or it resonated for me, this part of this, whichever story it was, where this student gets so fed up and, you know, and irritated and wants, and then actually leaves. Because that is such a part of this experience. Several times in these 3 days, I'm like, what am I doing? I could have seen many good movies. But there's, you know, what follows that at some point is this little kernel of that felt good, you know, that somehow there is some speaking of truth in that interaction. And, you know, and I have another teacher who described that as the taste of samadhi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a little, just a little taste. And it gets me to come back and keep going.
Yeah.
Often some students will come to me, and you probably a lot of you experience this when you come to me for Dokusan. You'll say something that's troubling you, or and I say, "Oh, that's a great practice," and I can see the look on. Are you kidding me? But yeah, keep coming back.
And this taste—that's such a lovely image, because can't grasp it, like, or yet I get a whiff of its fragrance, right? I can't understand, but I get just a little scent. And that scent is priceless. And we know in our heart there is nothing more important than this, right? So we dive back. All right, I'm coming. I'm going to go over again this morning. Right? One more day, probably the last day, but I'll come today. Great, thanks.
So maybe the last one, Corbin?
I really appreciated how he woke up and went, oh. You know, because so many times, I'm sure, I mean, it's happened to me, where I come down from the dopes and I'm going, I have no fucking clue. And I sit down and go, oh. Or I'm in the shower, not even thinking about it, and the idea pops into my head. I'm sitting on the toilet, or I wake up, or just the other day, there's something was said in Dokusan that didn't seem to apply, and it was stuck in my head. And as I was shoveling snow, just kind of going, I want to go to bed, but I have to shovel this stupid snow. And this other random thought came into my head, and then I went, oh wow, that, yeah. And it just, like, nothing happened, and yet something happened, and they didn't even seem related, and it's just, you know, it just kind of, it's neat that it's, even though they said he achieved this great samadhi, it still, it was that sort of natural, just kind of, nothing was going on, though. Oh, now I get it, and it's not like you got hit or anything, it's... I don't know, he just kind of brought it home.
I think that naturalness is so important, to realize that what we're doing here is just like the amaryllis flower. Utterly impossible and utterly natural. This is what happens to human beings, and not because you're so smart or because you work so hard, but just because the universe is constantly giving itself to us.
So with that, we'll sit for a few more moments and let the words of the talk and the dialogue sink into us.